The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Good morning to you all. This is Ryan Tubridy. It is Friday morning, the 16th of August, 2019. We're here till 10 o'clock. The text number is alive and well and open for business on 51551. You can email ryan at rte.ie. A little damp outside, but that won't stop us from enjoying each other's company, I hope. I was in Dublin City yesterday afternoon, went to an old coffee shop I haven't been to for a long, long time now, at the behest and request of my eldest, and we sat in a place called the Metro Cafe. Does that mean anything to anyone? Really nice spot. Great to sit in the window and watch the world go by. Saw across the road Paul Costello and his son having a cup of coffee at another coffee shop, and saw Daryl Breen ambling by in the street just doing his own thing. Stopped to chat to Paul, and Daryl bounced by, so I didn't get a chance to say hello to him. And we had soup and a sandwich and chatted and caught up. And the reason I'm mentioning all of this is that Dublin has been ranked as one of the friendliest cities on the planet. And when we get Dublin right, we get it right. When it's wrong, it's a pain in the neck. Same with every village, every town, every city in the country. But there it is in independent.ie reporting that a new poll puts Dublin in sixth place and Cork is 17th in a list of the world's friendliest cities, or and proves that our welcome is as warm as ever. Top of the poll to you, Father, is Vancouver. Vancouver, friendliest people in the world, it seems. But Ireland was streets ahead of more glamorous cities like New York and London. And I can see why. New York and London are great cities. They're vibey, but they're not friendly. They're not warm. But they are great, exciting, glamorous, interesting places to be. But the poll people said for such a small city, Dublin packs a serious punch when it comes to friendliness. People here are good-natured, with a good sense of humour. Whether you're lost or just looking for a chat in a pub, Dubliners will be on hand to help out. Locals even thank the bus driver, which is the perfect example of classic Irish warmth. I like that. I like when you're hopping off the bus or if the driver himself or herself give you a warm welcome when you're getting on. Very, very nice thing. But I never thought of that as a thing, that when you thank the bus driver, that's kind of unusual. But I like that keeps us a little different, a little special. Anyway, Vancouver, as I say, took the top spot. And there's other places, obviously, down the list. But it was Dublin ranked as sixth most friendly city in the world. So that's not bad news at all. Breakingnews.ie telling us in Donegal. And this is something I saw. Where did I see it? I was probably up around Donegal, actually, the last time I was up there. A Donegal county councillor says he's encouraging people to go out and deface English tourism signs in the Gaeltacht region. And you'll see this around the place. I've seen it for 1,000 years. Remember, as a kid out in Connemara, you'll see people just go, no, we don't want to see the Irish and the English together, and they will spray the English nameplate out entirely. And this comes as a number of the signs, including a number for the Wild Atlantic Way, were scribbled out, leaving just the Irish language version. So the local independent county councillor in question is Micheál McGilla Aisbuig, and has refused to condemn the attacks on tourist signs. In fact, he said he encourages anyone who feels strongly enough about the Irish language to go out and take, quote, direct action, unquote. And he said some people have decided not to be silenced while watching a very beautiful and progressive language dying. I fully support this action, and I would ask others to go out, he said, and if they believe direct action is what's required, then do what they have to do. I will not condemn it, he said, adding, if a tourist comes all the way from a remote area of Italy, then surely they can find their way around West Donegal. So that's actively encouraging the defacing of the signs to, in a bid to keep the Irish language alive. And well, I'm not sure if that's the correct approach, but certainly that's the one he feels is relevant, as do others clearly around the country who do this. Take the can of spray and go out and deface the signs. Back to New York again. And Tiffany & Company. Tiffany & Company, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen a box from Tiffany. For some reason, that colour, I don't know, is it duck egg? Somebody's going to tell me the exact precise colour it is. Tiffany blue, turquoisey. Anyway, it's very, very distinctive to look at. Very beautiful and stylish. And according to this piece, Tiffany & Company hasn't had any trouble getting men to come and shop for the ladies in their lives. But now the jeweller behind those iconic blue boxes wants them to stay and peruse for themselves. Robin Egg Blue. Yes, Robin Egg Blue. How beautiful. Even the name is pretty. And Tiffany is rolling out its first comprehensive jewellery line for men. They want to try and get the fellas in to buy some jewellery for themselves and to try and stop declining sales. And come October, the new collection will include nearly 100 designs, some of which will fetch prices as high as $15,000. And Tiffany plans to add home furnishing and accessories such as ice tongs and beer mugs with male customers in mind. Could you think of anything more repulsive than drinking beer out of a mug? Anyway, retail experts say it could be a tough sell. The glitz and glamour of Tiffany has long been tied to feminine jewellery. Men still see Tiffany as a female-based proposition just because of its heritage and even things like the colour of the boxes. It could be quite difficult for them to really persuade male customers that they have something to offer and that is relevant to them. Men all over the world are wearing jewellery and more accessories as part of a wardrobe. You started to see it on the runways and in social media. I wouldn't wear jewellery if you paid me. Not one bit of it. And because it's not my thing. Having said that, I got a gorgeous watch recently, but it was limited edition, it was a gift, a Beatles type watch, which I might have a look at, but that's hardly jewellery. The other thing is a necklace, not for me, but I presume some women would find men wearing bracelets and chains and chokers or whatever they're attractive. And if that's your bag, that's your bag, no issue with that at all. But Tiffany are trying to get you in and get you buying some jewellery. But not I, said the fly. Now, Ed Sheeran is... They've set up a sort of... almost an exhibition of Ed's past to display how he has evolved from a schoolboy into a national superstar. His dad actually put it together, John Sheeran. It's called Made in Suffolk, and it focuses on Ed's passion for music and showcases unseen images of the star busking in different parts of the world, including this photograph that I have in front of me of him at the age of 13 busking in Galway outside Ladbrokes. And it's amazing. Somebody obviously saw the picture because he looks so Irish in it. Somebody said, not an Irish scenario. This very, very red-headed young fella with his guitar busking in the streets. And that is going to be part of the collection. How about that? Now, where else am I going to go this morning? Because there's a restaurant worker in Britain who claims she was sacked for missing a shift because her dog had died, has launched a campaign to introduce pet bereavement leave. Now, I'm not too cynical about this because I firmly believe people bereave their pets, and I get that entirely. If a dog dies, it's awful. Like there's a gaping hole left in the family home or the unit. So I totally understand why you do that. But whether employers will buy into that, I'm not so sure. So we shall see if that takes hold or not. Text already 51551. Would you wear cufflinks? Yes, I would, and I do, and I have. Funny enough, about 2 years ago, I stopped wearing shirts with a double cuff on the TV show because it was I just felt they were of a few years before. So I have a heap of cufflinks that are kind of gathering dust at the moment. So that's one. What about a tie pin? Yeah. Would you call that jewellery? Possibly. Again, it's probably a bit too much. I think that sometimes you can overdress in a suit and you can put too much accessory on and you can just look a bit too much, essentially. I prefer a little understatement is generally good. My daughter's room is painted the Tiffany Blue, says the text. Dulux Paint actually call it Tiffany Blue. There you are. Not Robin Egg Blue, but Tiffany Blue. People will get it. Paddy says, signs in both languages encourage Irish. They help people to learn. And that is Togalor Amadon in Sontir Shot, he says. So if you get that, you get that, and you know what he's doing. But it's a true story too. And what about a type in? Yes, I meant to type in. Okay. Can you come back to this, to the various stories in the papers this morning? And one talks about the parents of the man, the Ohio shooter, who killed 9 people earlier this month in a mass shooting, have apologised. The reason they're apologising is that they wrote an obituary for their son and they put it online. And there's a desperate sadness to this story because they said in the obituary that their son, Connor Betts, who murdered all these people, but is still their son. He said that he was funny, articulate and intelligent, with striking blue eyes and a kind smile. But they neglected to mention the fact that he actually killed 9 people, including his sister. And you can't, I just don't think you can do that and try and erase history in an obituary. And yet you do understand the parents going, well, he was our boy. There's something desperately sad about all that. It reminded me of the Noah Hawley book, The Good Father. It's fiction, but it recounts in this book, which I'd really highly recommend, did a few years ago. It talks about, what did Lee Harvey Oswald's dad think? And what did Saran Saran's mother feel? And what did all these, and think about this, apply this to, you know, all the great criminals of our time, famous or otherwise. They're sons and daughters and brothers and sisters. And I'm not trying to take away from the awfulness of the criminality and the crime and the murder and the pain of the cause to the victims' families. But if you are the father or the mother, you're in a totally different world, because are you your sons and daughters keepers if they're slaughterers and murderers? I don't know. It just struck me that story was more loaded and nuanced than a simple headline of take it down and finish it off. I was also very taken by my encounter with Chris Donovan yesterday. Whatever you felt about the interview, which was overwhelmingly positive, so thanks for that. But just at a personal level, I felt very enlightened about the defence forces. The podcast of that interview will be up in our highlights of the week, so worth having a listen back if you didn't. And Ken wrote to say that I'm sitting here in Leopardstown listening to your interview with Chris on the RTE player, and the memories are coming back. My wife is now convinced that my night terrors and excessive night sweats are linked to my one trip to the lab back in 1982. I was in HQ COI company fixing radios, and so not the front line, but my main memory of terror was falling into a hole and thinking only of scorpions. And I managed to get myself out, but with a broken ankle. And nearly 40 years later, still unsure if related, we had fatalities self-inflicted in 82 and 83 in many situations during the trip. But so best wishes to Chris. And he was very articulate, but clearly troubled. He was. And, you know, I should note that, you know, our friend and colleague Nicola Barden in the Irish Sun, she did a wonderful series on the state of the Defence Forces, which brought these Chris's story certainly to our attention. And to her credit, it brought these people kind of out of the shadows where they should be and into the paper and into the programme like this, and allowed people like Mirish Dabara, who is a veteran of the Congo, to write to us this email, which says that you begin by telling us that you enjoyed the interview as much as you could. You said you're a Congo veteran, he writes, and understood exactly when Chris spoke of demons haunting soldiers who served in the UN as peacekeepers in war-torn countries. He writes, there are so many stories like Chris Donovan's, some every bit as difficult, some very funny, some that will show how brave and strong and yet how soft and kind an Irish soldier can be to the local people. And in the Congo, we shared the meagre amount of food that we got with the local children. It is only in the past few years that any of us have started to talk a little bit about our awful experiences in these places. Believe me, that it was only 2 years ago that I told my 28-year-old son any of my stories. We started doing this because a few Facebook pages were posted on the internet for veterans, and little by little, we came to trust each other and share our experiences. You just can't understand how much this has meant to so many families who said that their husband, father, and even down to grandchildren who had never heard even one story before their loved one passed away. So let's hear more of these stories on radio and television. So thanks for your time and patience, Mirish Dabara. Thank you, Mirish, for your story, and it's great. I just feel something positive is happening to tell these stories, as you say, of bravery, of sadness, of recovery, of kindness. It can only be a good thing. And there's a story in the UK today which kind of chimes with what you're saying, and this refers to a 98-year-old D-Day veteran. We were talking about the Lebanon in the 80s. This is now right back to Saving Private Ryan material. And this veteran refused his medals after the Second World War. And for whatever reason, his name's Colin Palmer. And he was approached recently, and they said to him, Colin, is there any chance you would accept those medals all these years later with a view to talking about and highlighting the awareness of post-traumatic stress disorder? We spoke about this with Chris yesterday, PTSD. And he said, well, I'll do it. So on Wednesday, And Mr. Palmer, who has two children and a grandchild, was officially presented with his medals. Imagine that, all these years later, for D-Day. He got them from Major General Mark Armstrong. He received his 1939 to 45 star, the France and Germany star, the Defence Medal, and the War Medal. And in addition to that, he was awarded the Légion d'honneur by the French, honorary French consul. And he did this so that people like me would tell you about the awfulness of PTSD as suffered by people like Chris, who we spoke to yesterday. So from World War II right up to the present day, it's something that needs to be discussed and commented upon. Okay, lots in the papers today about movies and things you might like to go and see at the weekend. So we'll have a look at that in a few minutes' time. If you look at the internet, says the text, you'll find a joint interview with Jeffrey Dahmer and his father. Well, that is an intriguing prospect. I may well have a little look at that, so thank you for that. And another from Jenny, who says, as an English woman currently learning Irish, listening at her boyfriend's home in Donegal and having spent the day travelling in the Gaeltacht on Tuesday, the combination of English and Irish wording is brilliant for helping me further my language. Good. And that's probably more helpful than just one scrawled out. So that's good of you to text on that. 51551 is the text number. I know you love the King, Ryan. 42 years gone today. You're so right. And not only do I love the King, I went to Graceland, did the whole tour onto the Lisa Marie plane and the outfits and museum. And even as stunning was the trip to Sun Studios. Anyone listening who's been there will know. And if you have a bucket list, and if you're thinking about going to Memphis to that pilgrimage of sorts, you will not be wasting your time or your money. It is a dream ticket of a holiday. So as you say, 42 years gone today.